Sports, politics, life. Back 9 Development presents Kevin Keatsman Has Issues. Online at back9development.com.
It's certainly getting more serious than we originally thought with Jackson Mahomes, the brother of Chiefs quarterback Patrick Mahomes, as he was basically arrested on Wednesday, stemming from an incident that took place in February in Johnson County at a restaurant called Aspen's on 151st Street, restaurant and bar, where he, all of this is allegedly, we've seen video, so you can draw your own conclusions, grabs, kisses, and grabs the throat of the owner of the restaurant, who is a woman aged 40. Jackson Mahomes is 22. This occurred in February. By her account, he made comments like, let's be a power couple. Let's me and you be it. Let's do this. And she said to him, you're clearly out of your mind right now. Get off me, as she's pushing him away. There is likely more than what we have seen on video, as the police have been investigating this now for quite some time, over 2 months, since this occurred on February 25th. And now Jackson Mahomes has been charged with 3 counts of aggravated sexual battery and a 4th count of battery. We believe the 4th count of battery is the allegation that he physically shoved and knocked over or pushed around a waiter that was serving their group in the restaurant. It has been one incident after another with Jackson Mahomes since his brother Patrick became a star with the Kansas City Chiefs and Jackson became an adult and moved here. Remember, he's only 22, so when Patrick Mahomes was first starting, this young man was still at home. And now he's here, and he's wreaking havoc on the city, and now he has 4 pretty serious-sounding charges. It is not likely, he met his $100,000 bond, and he's been released. It's not likely that he's going to have a jail sentence here. That's the good news for Jackson Mahomes. And this is a life that is, well, very much within saving and rescuing. He clearly has some problems, whether it be mental problems or social problems or, you know, anything that could stem from seeing the wealth and fame of your brother, jealousy, whatever, you know, take a psychologist. Freud would have to figure all that out, not me. But we can see it. We know what is abnormal behavior, and this is abnormal behavior. It is abnormal behavior to do the dancing videos on the sideline at the games. It's abnormal behavior to find yourself on a dead guy's spot in Washington on the field dancing and doing a TikTok video. It's not normal to get into arguments and fights with fans, to pour beer on them. It's not an ice and things like that. These are not normal behaviors. It was not normal for him to big time the owners of the restaurant downtown a couple of years ago, where he walked in and basically said, do you know who I am? This would have been when he was 20 or just turned 21. Completely embarrassing. And you cannot, because you're Patrick Mahomes' brother, go around sticking your tongue down any woman's throat that you want. You can't. You cannot do that. That is against the law. And no less, it was in her office and the door was closed. So this is bad, and it's probably worse than what we're seeing. There's probably more video and more evidence to have 4 counts here. Again, they'll probably plead it down, and maybe they can plead this thing down to battery or something, and he, you know, gets some sort of probation and a big fine or something. I can't imagine this turning into a jail sentence. It's the first time on something like this for Jackson Mahomes, but it's a complete and utter embarrassment for the Mahomes family, for the Kansas City Chiefs, not for the city of Kansas City or anything like that. But the embarrassment here is a topic that I really like discussing. We see organizations like the Kansas City Chiefs, and it is amazing to me how much they control outside of their business, whether it's people in the media, politicians, other organizations, corporations. The Chiefs have a lot of power and influence. They can control your life. They got involved in changing my life because they wanted to, and they're powerful, and they did it. This is what they do. The astounding thing to me is they don't take care of any of their own stuff. Why not? Why don't they take care of this? We've been talking for over 2 years on this podcast about Jackson Mahomes and, at that time, the fiancé being fools on social media. And the Chiefs apparently are just doing nothing about it and have done nothing about it. And now what? They've got to cut off access. Jackson Mahomes cannot be on the sideline anymore. He can't. They cannot allow access for this guy anymore. The good news for Jackson Mahomes is he may not be hireable with your company or my company, but his brother owns a lot of companies and he'll be able to work and rebuild his life. And we hope the best for him. We certainly didn't think it was going to you know, the ridiculous behavior that he demonstrates all the time was an embarrassment, and now it's a criminal charge, four criminal charges, and it's pretty serious. You cannot live your life like this. And you basically have done nothing. I probably don't remind Jackson Mahomes. He's done nothing with his life. He's 22. He's done nothing. Now, plenty of 22-year-olds have done nothing with their life. The light bulb doesn't, and plenty of really great, successful people don't do much until they're 25 or 30 or even 35. There's a growing up period, being an adult, whatever. But he's just living the life off his brother. And this is on Patrick, too. And it's on the wife as well, because she has been supporting him since these charges February 25th. On Twitter, on social media, supporting Jackson, basically saying this is unfounded, he's a good kid, he did nothing wrong, and now she looks like a fool. She looks like a fool for supporting him. They're clearly close. They like each other. They act a lot alike. But this was all so preventable, and the Chiefs could see this coming. Maybe not that it would be criminal, but it's always been embarrassing. It's always been silly and stupid and embarrassing, and the Chiefs just went along with it. They just allowed the clown show to happen. And I don't know why they do it. I don't know why they can't go to Patrick Mahomes and say, we're signing you to another contract and we're making you the highest paid player in the league again. Could you please get your wife and your brother off social media? Could you just have a sit down with them and stop? This is bigger than that. You're taking care of them. It's been reported that he built a house for his brother or was going to build a place for his brother to live. I'm sure there's a gazillion companies that Mahomes is affiliated with that can hire him. He can work. He'll no doubt be a millionaire because of who his brother is, with influence and power and all these things. And we can only hope that an incident like this and being charged with all four counts in Johnson County will be a defining moment in this young man's life and be a place where he really turns the corner. We're very much hoping that that is indeed what happens with Jackson Mahomes. But the charges and everything sounds more serious than what we had thought maybe initially. Jackson Mahomes in some real trouble. We've got a great interview coming up in just a couple of moments, brought to you by BStock.net in Olathe, 14680 South Flaming Road. I talked to my man Chris at BStock yesterday a little bit. What a good dude, man. What a good guy, and he's got a great deal for you right now. 65-inch Samsung TU7000 TVs for $429. The 70-inch, $459. And this beauty, the LG 86-inch 4K, just $999. It's nearly $1,500. Everywhere else. They also have Dell Latitudes, business-grade laptops. It's all at bstock.net or visit their warehouse at 14680 South Flaming Road. Amini's Galleria in Overland Park. Guys, this is it, man. Pinball machines, golden tee, pool tables, shuffleboard. They got all kinds of great fun stuff at Amini's. It's the toy store right there. It's the toy store for big boys. That's right. They got all kinds of cool things, including bar stools, outdoor furniture, fire pits. You name it, it's all at Amini's. You know about Amini's. They've been in Kansas City for 50 years. I've known Arash Amini since the 90s. These are great folks. It's a wonderful family. They've expanded their business. They're also in St. Louis, Tulsa, and Oklahoma City. It's Amini's, a staple. You know it. A legendary store in Kansas City, 105th and Metcalf in Overland Park. Mention the podcast. They'll give you information about 60 months no interest. And outdoor furniture's on sale when you mention KKHI. At Amini's, 105th and Metcalf. Advanced Medical Imaging is online at medimageks.com. If you need an MRI or a CT scan, why wait? See what's inside today. All major insurance is accepted. Healthcare is kind of a mess other places, but not at Advanced Medical Imaging. They will get you right in for your MRI or your CT scan. You can jump out of your hospital system to go do that. Your insurance will cover it. You have the right to go wherever you want to get these scans done. That's why this company started. We're going to get people who need a scan today, and not make them wait 3 weeks. Online at medimageks.com. They also do the heart scans. That's out of pocket, but it's under $100. I strongly advise anyone 40 or older to go get that heart scan done. It's a pretty cool deal. Online, medimageks.com. We got a tremendous amount of feedback from our podcast a couple of days ago about Kadrin Sullivan, the 15-year teacher at my alma mater, Shawnee Mission North, after she wrote an amazing piece for a website called The Lion. You can go to the website and read it in its entirety at readlion.com, R-E-A-D, readlion.com. And Kadrin just knocked it out of the ballpark with a story that's titled, Yes, Your Children Are Being Indoctrinated. It is stunning how she pulls the curtain back on the entirety of the Shawnee Mission School District, and we are so proud to have her right here on KKHI to tell her brave story of stepping out of the norm inside this school district that has gone woke. Hit it!
The KK Has Issues conversation is presented by Buck Roofing, online at rbuckroofing.com. Sleep well knowing Buck Roofing fixed the roof over your head.
Well, she is brave, and she has really shined an amazing light on the Shawnee Mission School District. We are so pleased to have Cadren Sullivan joining us now, 15-year English teacher in the Shawnee Mission School District and at my alma mater, Shawnee Mission North, and she has written this piece at readlion.com. We've been talking about all week, and it is stunning to read this, and she joins us now. Hi, Cadren. How are you today?
Hi, I'm great. Thank you for having me.
Well, thank you so much for joining me. The obvious question here, the easy question right up front is, why now? What compelled you to write this brilliant piece?
So this in the last month, in April, we were told as a staff to use the preferred pronouns and names of our transgender students and then hide those pronouns and names to the parents when we communicate with them via email or phone. And I just believe that's wrong. I just don't think that parents would want, you know, to find out that their minor child, that the district is lying to them about what is going on regarding them. And it just really felt wrong to me. And I just not going to do that.
Okay. So the Shawnee Mission School District is telling educators, do not inform parents if their children are transitioning and you see this and know this at school. We're going to keep that from the parents. That's like an order. You have to comply with that.
Well, you know, some of the questions, I mean, other staff members were, you know, questioning this. And one of the points made was, you know, we'd like to see it written down. I mean, they may say that this is their policy, but write it down where we can see where the policy is, because this seems to be a dangerous position for, you know, us to be in if there is some sort of backlash from a parent who is not happy with that. And then, you know, they could say, well, we don't have a that policy or whatever, you know. So to me, I wanted clarity. I wanted them to write down the position from the district on what they want on that.
Yeah, I just think it's amazing keeping information from parents. I just don't even understand that. So let me ask you this, and I know, you know, we discussed a little bit what we're going to be talking about today, but a lot of times I come up with questions from things that I hear you say. And you talked about plural transgender kids in the school. You've been teaching there for 15 years. I have seen the numbers of young people that now identify as LGBTQ compared to 10 years ago, 20 years ago, 30 years ago, 40 years ago. And it is staggering that it's up somewhere around the 20 percentile now of young people will say that they identify as something or think that they may be gay or fit into one of these categories. You've been doing this for 15 years. The topic here is transgenderism. How has that changed? How many trans kids did you see 15 years ago and how many do you see now?
Well, it wasn't spoken to the same way that it is today. I mean, it's just very open now. I mean, we did have, you know, I can think of one student from maybe 10 years ago. But beyond that, I mean, it's just exploded with this almost obsession with talking about the gender and the race in all of our staff meetings. It's just race and gender, really. And, you know, we're not talking about the education. But, yes, there have – I have I don't know what the actual number is, but it's just exploded as far as transgender students in the building.
Do you see these kids called like furries? They dress up like animals and stuff and identify as something like that. Do you have that as well?
I have not seen furries, but I have seen, you know, people wear stuff around. But that is another area where the policy from the district is vague. You know, what is the policy around this? You know, we don't know, you know, there is nothing that requires us to do anything. It's just vague, you know, just discrimination. But, you know, like, where do we stop with that? I mean, what if the pronoun is, you know, these neo pronouns, which we just had a staff meeting on that as well, talking about the neo pronouns. But it's just, it's every day. Sometimes it's in the middle of the semester where all of a sudden a student will just say, you know, now my name is, you know, I'd like to be called this and my pronouns are this, you know, even though on the rosters, everything is their, you know, legal given name and their biological sex in the in our system.
You'll have to help me. What is a neo pronoun?
It is a little bit confusing. We just had a staff meeting on this, and so we had a presentation on them. I think, you know, like XE, if you wanted to be like, I mean, I would just do a Google search on neo pronouns and why we need to start thinking of them, because it is a lot.
They are literally making this stuff up as they go. This is unbelievable. So it's just shocking to see these things and these policies and what's going on. Do you believe personally, is your personal, and I think my listeners know my views, but this isn't about me. We're interviewing you today. Do you believe this is, we know that teenagers, young people, look for acceptance. They look for popularity. They're, you know, I've always described junior high as the worst time of my life. I was like one of the last kids to hit puberty. I mean, it was just not a good time for me. You're always looking for approval or acceptance or something. Is this a mental thing? And are they being encouraged to be transgender or to, you know, dress up and be a furry or whatever, because they believe it is a way to gain acceptance?
I think in some cases that is true, but I mean, they're all different. Each individual is unique. And, you know, I have no ill will towards anybody in my classes at all, but you know, sometimes you don't know what the reason is. I mean, you can't really know what the reason is, but yes, this is a very challenging time for many students, and because of the numbers, you know, there are some students where, you know, there might be confusion, but you really don't know. But again, I'm just here to teach the English. I'm not a psychologist. Right. I just, you know, be kind and compassionate to everybody that's in my classroom. So, you know, why they're doing it is really not my issue. But, you know, they do strongly urge us to go around the classroom and, you know, give our pronouns to everybody. And I just, you know, I don't do that. But, you know, I have a system where they, you know, give me a journal and tell me what they want me to know. And then I do everything that I can to call them by the name that they prefer and the pronouns they prefer. And I do that, you know, for them. But yeah. I don't really have the reason.
Right. Well, you know, to me, it's simply impossible to go from 2% of the population to nearly 20% of the population and say this is biological. So in some way, it is a learned behavior. I'm curious what the district's policy is, and I don't know much about being a teacher. I'm just being honest. So if I'm asking you dumb questions, let me know. But what do they train you or teach you in? If you think you have a student that has a mental health problem, what are you supposed to do when that happens? Refer them to a counselor or somebody at the district, or tell the parents you're an English teacher, you're not an expert in mental health, but if you think you have a student that has a mental health problem, what's a teacher supposed to do?
We would go to the social worker or somewhere in the student services and talk to, you know, the staff that is in that, you know, that has the social worker and the counselors and take it to them. And then they can, you know, look at that a little bit further. But I mean, they're overextended. I mean, there's a lot of anxiety and depression that's going around in the buildings, and these workers in student services are, you know, have a lot on their plate.
Does the district even consider that gender dysphoria is a mental health problem?
I can't answer that. I mean, this is very new. This is one of my concerns, because as a teacher, I don't really know what the district position is. They're very vague on what you can and cannot do. And so, you know, always for me, the best thing to do is just, you know, have these kids in the classroom, all of my students, and treat them the same way, you know, with respect and, you know, compassion and high expectations, no matter what they are, transgender, race, you know, and that's really the most important aspect of them being in my classroom. As far as mental health, if I had an issue, I would take it to them. I don't know what they're pushing. All I know is that if they're going to say something about transgender, I think that there is value in looking at something like Detransition, the documentary, or the whistleblower from, I don't have the name right now, but there's a whistleblower that felt compelled to talk about how they are mistreating some of these kids, and they're allowing them to do, you know, some medical stuff that, you know, might not be appropriate for them, that will have lifelong ramifications for their life.
Well, and it's passing into law now in the state of Kansas, where you teach, that your biological sex stays with you in Kansas. Your driver's license will always reflect that, and you will be known in, you know, any police computers or anything. If you get pulled over, there's not going to be any, you know, crazy information for an officer. If you get pulled over for speeding or worse, or a real crime, trying to figure out, is your name Kevin or Karen? Are you a male or a female? The state of Kansas is passing law now saying that ain't going to fly. We're going to name the gender biologically at birth, and that stays with you in this state. So they're moving at the state level, and maybe the school districts will follow at some point. What I'm hearing you say, Kadrian, and just tell me if I'm all wrong, what I'm hearing you say is the district hasn't really done a deep dive into this to really get to the root of the issue and do something to make things better. What they're doing is just appeasing the left. They're skimming the surface here and saying, look at us. We're doing DEI. We're out there because we care and we're inclusive. It doesn't sound like they're doing the real hard work here. They're just doing enough to make it look like they're doing something.
Yes. And, you know, they are, they're, for me personally, as a teacher in the district, it's very important for me that the district state their position on these policies, because that has ramifications to the teachers in the building if they're accused of something, or, you know, because the policy is where they drive, you know, everything. And so if they're vague on that, if they don't, you know, state it directly, if they are wishy-washy on what is allowed and what isn't, I think that they don't want to have it stated. They don't want to write it down. And, you know, with the presentations we get, this was just recently in the last couple of weeks, was another reason why I wanted to come forward, is we had a presentation and they would not release the slideshow that we were compelled to watch to me. They would not release it. And I asked why. There was a meeting set up, and, you know, there's no answer. Why will they not release the curriculum that we are required to watch?
Right. You write in your story, and that's where I was going next, on the transgender policy. The district conceals the transgender policies from the public and will not release the DEI presentations we, meaning teachers, are compelled to watch. I don't even know how that's legal. These are publicly funded school districts. I don't know how they can keep anything. Now, I'm not the best at filing a Freedom of Information Act or something, but if we have to do it, I think this stuff should be everywhere. I think it should be all over the internet. I think if the school district is going to have teachers watching this and doing this, I think the public has a right to see it. And the more this comes out and the more shocking it may be to people, the more advancement we will have. Truly, the better we will be at coming together and not just identifying somebody for something as shallow as gender or skin color or religion. These things to me are just ridiculous. Okay? It should not define what a person is in any way. I think you're in agreement with me. That, to me, is the most inclusive possible policy, is to not go out of your way to be more inclusive to someone else. To me, that's just bias.
It's polarizing progressive racism, and it's dangerous, and it needs to be removed from what we're doing. I don't even understand why we are doing this and not focusing on academics. I mean, the academics have taken a second seat or a back seat to all of this dangerous, it's immoral. It doesn't help. I mean, nothing is getting better in the building. It just makes it worse. It's performance virtue signaling, and it's I don't want to be any part of it. It you can't be talked out of it. You know, the people that believe this are really, they just won't even argue the merits of the arguments, you know? So yes, I am in agreement with you.
All right. Before we get to the questions about you and your experience and what's happening now, I want to take a couple of moments and talk about race, because you write about this as well. And I'll read from your piece for all of our listeners here, where you write, "We are being manipulated and intimidated by a divisive woke ideology that is creating a culture of contempt and disrespect. The Shawnee Mission School District is fostering a toxic environment and requiring employees to attend diversity, equity, and inclusion training and workshops centered around critical race theory, including Black Lives Matter in the classroom and social justice in the classroom, using teachers' white privilege, white supremacy, and decolonizing our classrooms propaganda. There is repeated white shaming and preoccupation with white people as the oppressor, including staff field trips with a focus on systemic racism. Then you refer to white saviorism. How is this going for you? You're white. What is this like? What do your fellow educators say? And what do the students feel when they know the district is doing this?
Again, I will say, you know, to me, when we go to these DEI meetings, to me, it is just straight performance virtue signaling. It's terrible. There are some of us that, you know, I have what I call Twilight Zone moments where I'm sitting there and I'm looking around and it's just like, how is this even happening that we are promoting and endorsing the use of whiteness, white supremacy, white dominance, silence is violence, all of those trigger words, color blindness, affinity spaces, you know, all of it, the microaggressions, you know, why are we doing this? You know, it's very difficult to be in the building when this is kind of the outlook that we're systemically racist in America. Everything is tainted by racism, and this is the way that we need to approach our teaching in the classroom. It's hard. You know, and as an English teacher, you know, in AP, which I have other classes, but in my AP classes, all we do is look at arguments. But these students don't see any other arguments. And I, you know, I've got a lot on that where, you know, they don't even see what the other argument is because you're shunned and called a racist. The students especially are, you know, silenced. They don't feel comfortable. I'm an adult and I bring it up and I'm, you know, called a racist and, you know, transphobic and just for having an alternate view on some of this. But it's degrading to people of color that they can only make it in America as white people if they're redeemed through the agency of others like me. And I just think it's wrong to do that, to create this victimhood mindset with these students.
So are there literally teachers that make white students uncomfortable, that they believe that they should feel guilty for being white or that they owe society something because they're white? Are they being taught this and buying in and they feel bad because they're white?
Well, here's the thing, is that any teacher who believes in this, there's no way that you can stop them from teaching it. They will spin any book. They will spin any article. They can do that, but no one else is in the classroom with you. And so, I mean, it's an undivided attention from your students and they don't want to speak up about it, you know, so it's really difficult. It's really going to be hard to get this out of the public schools because I don't know how, you know, I know that there are teachers who do teach books from a racist angle, but they would hide that from parents. They would hide that from, you know, staff, but in their rooms, they can do whatever they want to do.
Okay. So what do you believe the end game is here? Because this is not good for society. It doesn't really have much to do with educating, learning English, math, science, whatever. It doesn't really, to me, have a lot of place there. Is this all just political? Do you believe this is a giant organized effort by school districts, teachers unions, and whatnot to garner votes for the left to keep power in the United States?
Well, I have a couple of comments on that. Number one, the union is teachers who feel the same way that I do really should stop paying dues to the union. We should not feel forced or compelled to fund the Democratic Party just because we're teachers. And I think it's somewhere in between 95 to 99% of all those funds go to support people that I would never support. And so, you know, there is that, you know, they are driving a lot of what happens in schools just because there's so much money there for the Democratic Party. But another thing that needs to happen in my perspective is that the current DEI curriculum, not necessarily banning it, but you've got to allow other views in. There's got to be, you know, in good faith argument on the merits of the arguments, but they won't allow any of that in.
Have you thought about, would you possibly run for school board?
I have thought about it. It has come up in conversation. I don't really know how to combat it. I almost feel like that it's gone so far that it's really going to be difficult. I mean, it's almost like you've got to just start from the ground up. But there's so many people in the district that just believe that this is the right way to do, you know, school, that I don't even know how that is going to work. But yes, it needs to begin at the community level. And I believe that a lot of the district administrators would believe what I am saying, but the mob would come after them next. I mean, people are just scared to even bring it up because they will call you a racist and they will threaten you and they will ostracize you. And it's uncomfortable in the building if you don't think this way or that you don't have guilt because you're white. You know, so it's very difficult for anybody to bring it up. And if it's hard for us as adults, these kids, you know, more students, if they could stand up and call it out, would be great. But they will get, you know, their social media, they'll be just damaged. They will have to have this backlash where they'll be ostracized by their friends. And it's a very scary place to be.
So how's your week been? How many people are all up in your kitchen? And I'm guessing you're also hearing support from a lot of folks. What has this experience been like for you?
It has been an overwhelming support from parents in the district, teachers in my building, teachers in the district, teachers from all over, you know, sending me messages of love and support. Parents have come out and, you know, just been so supportive that, you know, that I'm standing up to it. And then I have, you know, there's a handful of students and faculty the faculty has been pretty quiet. I haven't heard anything from staff members in my building speaking negatively about me, but I know that there have been some students, but it's overwhelming support, you know, for me. That's what I'm feeling more than anything.
Are you in any way uncomfortable? Do you feel like your fellow teachers, what do you think the breakdown is? Let's say just percentage wise, what do you figure the breakdown is at your school of people pretty far left that really like this stuff and want this included? And then folks like yourself, what would a breakdown be like at Shawnee Mission North?
I think it's majority left, but there are a lot there. I mean, I don't know the numbers because nobody wants to talk about it, because if you talk about it, then you're outed. And then, you know, then it all starts. People don't want you to know that you disagree with it because there will be backlash. So I don't know what the numbers are, but I do know that there are a lot of people that that agree that this DEI curriculum is shameful and needs to be addressed. That the district ignores that this is pushing leftist ideology in the buildings and in the schools. And people like me just want to have another opinion brought in to discuss these issues fairly, with good faith and good will, and not with malice and just hatred and, you know, the vitriol from other teachers who just don't agree with your opinions. I mean, it's pretty hostile.
Okay, I'm going to guess it's like any other workplace. There's a lot of teachers at your high school, but you probably know four or five that are pretty committed far left. Are they talking to you? Would they say hi as they pass in the hallway? Is there an awkward silence around some that you've got to have a pretty good idea of at least a handful of people that are pretty far left. Have you had, you know, any face-to-face with any of these people? What's that like?
It is no secret I believe that this curriculum was brought into Shawnee Mission in 2019. I believe that's when it was bought, and that is when we started to implement it. Then COVID happened, and then I started being more vocal about it. Everybody in the buildings knows that I am not on board with DEI as far as this white shaming, color blindness, you know, all of that structural systemic racism. I'm not on board with that. And it's everybody knows that. So there are teachers that will not talk to me. However, I'm not even fazed by that. To me, it just, they're not even, if you're not even willing to have the argument or to discuss it, you know, then, I mean, it doesn't bother me that much. I just go about my business and do the best I can to be fair and just open to all views.
You write in your piece, amidst a worsening teacher shortage, that saw the Shawnee Mission School District pay $3.5 million to out-of-state agencies to recruit and retain more educators, we are losing good teachers because of imposed divisive rhetoric. And I would ask you this, do you feel, because I've heard this, I don't know if this is true, do you think more conservative or traditional teachers are getting out of the business? And as the school district goes to recruit with $3.5 million in their back pocket to recruit new teachers, is there a litmus test to be on the left?
I don't know. I do feel like that because the district has known for a long time now that I'm not on board with this, that I'm not going to say it was absolutely targeted, but that there is a, I mean, the backlash that I'm getting from, you know, it does feel like they do not want anybody to challenge this narrative. And so they would prefer me to not say anything. And I don't make it comfortable. I go to the most liberal, you know, professional development workshops that I can go to just so I can see what's happening. And I always ask questions, or I send a message, you know, does this seem appropriate that we should be, you know, deconstructing or disparaging, you know, using these workshops as a way to promote and endorse this use of whiteness and all of this. And there's never an answer. They just ignore the question. Hmm. So, I mean, I think that the other piece of that is that it has been difficult. There are days where you can't get a sub, and that that subs are not, that we don't have, we're having to use our plan time to go and cover for teachers because there's no sub. So whatever is the reason, people are not getting into education, and a lot of it is because it is a toxic environment, and all of this politics is in the schools instead of the academics. I mean, why are we even doing this? Why are we not focusing on the education, the English? And this shouldn't even be something that I am dealing with at this level. Just, you know, I accept everyone in my classroom, and this is, why can't we just teach? Why can't we just teach? Yeah. Why do we have to even do this?
You know, my personal view is that colleges and universities are in real trouble. I just think they're in real trouble. We got artificial intelligence coming. You know, there's going to be so much cheating in college. They're just going to have AI spit out all their papers and do everything. Nobody's going to learn anything. They're going to go there and have their frat parties, and that's going to be that. I just don't know how we're going to sustain the education system that we have right now, and I'm not sure there's an appetite for it. And I think when people like you come forward, or I do a podcast, or parents go to school board meetings and get heard, and they're labeled, you know, terrorists by the federal government or whatever because they're worried about their kids' education, I think the needle's really moving in America. I think people are waking up for the first time going, wait a second, what's going on here? And I read a piece, and my number could be wrong, you can correct me. I read a piece that said in the state of Kansas, it costs on average $23,000 a student to go to school for a year. That's between all the redundancies in government. That's between the state, the school district, you know, real estate costs, building new facilities, all the different expenditures. If you take what is spent in a year in Kansas divided by the number of students, it turns out to $23,000 a student. And somebody on the right is going to step up and say, if this is what we're spending in the state of Kansas, let's give the parents $23,000 in vouchers every year and let them pick their own school to send their kid to. Don't you think it could head that way in conservative states?
I really believe that. Well, I think that it is, you know, after COVID, I think what happened was that parents were able to see what was happening in the classroom, and something happened where it was like, what? Like, why are they teaching that? And it was pretty blatant and out in the open. And I think that there is going to be a push for alternative schools. I look at King Randall. I don't know if you're familiar with him, but there are types of schools that are pulling up all over the place. But it's hard because parents right now, if you've got a kid in the school right now, what are you going to do? Like, where are you going to put them? Like, it's very disconcerting for the parent. I think so many parents would pull their kids out of the schools if they could, but they don't know where to put them. You know, so there does need to be a paradigm shift on, because the money, it just seems like that if you could provide a better education or something that would be more a better fit for your family, and make that choice. I believe that more parents want that, and I do think that it's going to go that way if it continues down this road.
No, I think that's the way it's got to go, and I think people like you are heroes. I think we're just at the beginning of this, but everybody I come into contact with is aware of what's going on in the schools. They don't know from the inside what you're seeing. Like, you've given us specifics here today that we have not heard. I mean, you're there, you see it. But everybody I know is talking about this stuff. I've got friends, we're in the Olathe Northwest District. My kids all went there. They're grown and gone, and they haven't been in high school for any of them for over 10 years. They didn't have furries, but there's a handful of furries up at this school that they let drink their milk out of like a dog bowl at a table. They just allow it to take place, condoning it essentially. I don't get any of it. I really don't. I'm all for people being individual, but this is not normal, good human behavior that's good for the common good of our community. It is not.
Well, I mentioned that the students run the school, and that in the classrooms, I speak to teachers all the time in the building where, you know, in the classrooms, you have students that would be on their phone for 90 minutes where they're, you ask them what's their screen time averages, and it's just astronomical, and they're in class watching movies, and it's demoralizing for teachers to be in a situation where really the academics are the focus, and they're getting no help from admin to help that situation where we can focus on academics. And a lot of it is, behavior of the students. You know, they're late to class. They don't turn anything in. We were told to really not have due dates as much as we can. Sometimes, that has been something that's been thrown out there recently. Tardies. You're not even, I don't even think that you're absent from class if you're there for half of the class. That's okay. You know, there's just a lot of happening that just, we're not able to teach because behavior is not conducive to having classrooms where you're learning.
Well, you write in your piece that the students are running the school. Can you do anything about a student on a phone? If they're sitting there with their phone, can you take it away? Can you stop them? What can you do when students aren't paying attention?
We were in January before students came back, we had a staff meeting and we were instructed to amp up our cell phone policy. I've always had a cell phone policy and I had one when they gave us this information at the staff meeting, but we did, I did amp that up. So I have a holder in the front of my room, and when kids come in, they put their phone in to their number. They each have a number and they put their phone in there, and then we go about our day. But I had this student who was openly defiant to my cell phone policy, who happened to be transgender, and this whole thing, instigated this whole kind of ball rolling to getting me to this point where it's just a really unfair process that the district has for that, because there is no policy for that. There are teachers who have been asking for a district policy, a cell phone policy, because they do not want to be off their phones, and students fight it every day, and they would just prefer to be on their phone scrolling, and then some of them would do that all block.
Have you heard any feedback since writing this piece for The Lion? Have you heard anything from any supervisors, anybody at your school that would be a supervisor or a boss or anyone at the school district? Has there been any feedback to you from anybody above you?
Right now it is radio silence. And I haven't heard from any administrator regarding any of this article. I have heard nothing from any administration in my school. So I don't really know what the response is. Although I will say that I do firmly believe that there are many people who feel the same way I do, but they cannot say it because they will be attacked by the mob, and they'll lose their jobs, or they might lose their jobs, or they're afraid of what will happen to their reputation, or whatever. They're just, people are scared to talk about it.
What would happen if the district had a school board meeting on this topic and this topic only, just like a special meeting, and say, parents welcome, students whatever, Cadron can come speak and take your 5 minutes or whatever it may be. What do you think that would look like? And what would the possibility be that they'd even entertain to doing something like that?
In my personal view, I just don't think that the district wants to deal with any alternate voices to this program. I don't think they want to. I think it would be chaotic if there was a board meeting where they have that. I think I would be shouted out of the room, most likely. But I mean, I don't know for sure. I don't know if that would happen. But I mean, there are some loud voices that are very upset that I'm shining a light on this. And all I want to do is get to the truth. You know, that this is happening, and it is divisive, and students are silent, and they're not given alternate views. They're just given this one side that America is, you know, irrecoverably racist, and it's in everything. And, you know, everything's tainted by racism. And if you're not on board with that, then you are not on the right side, and they don't want you there.
It's clear that you love teaching. It's clear that you love teaching English. Can you envision a day where you don't do this, where you get so frustrated, you walk away and do something else?
I have thought about, you know, what can I do? Because, you know, I came into teaching late, and I was in my 30s, and, you know, I just love that I had all those experiences before, but I just have such a passion for, you know, language and the story, and, you know, being able to relate, and Aristotle and the rhetorical situation, and that all communication, there's a, you know, there's a speaker, an audience, and a message. And we need to teach these kids that, you know, your view is not the only view. I tell every student of mine every year, you are entitled to whatever opinion you want. This is America. You can think whatever you want to think, but you have to back that up with evidence, and you have to realize that there are students and people of goodwill who do not agree with you. And that does not make them your enemy, but we're not doing that in the schools. We're teaching them to hate. And to be, you know, I am the enemy to many of the people in the building now, because I don't agree with that. I tried lots of things to help the situation over the last 3 years, and nothing has really made a difference. I'm just ignored. So, you know, I've done some things, like I started a little library in my classroom, which has been really nice, and I'm very proud of it. But I tried to order one Black conservative author for the library. Our library went through our, you know, school's, you know, policy for how you get, you know, to order a book for our school library, and they would not let me do it. I was stonewalled. I could not order one Black conservative author. And so I went to a workshop where, they were teaching students, or they were teaching teachers, how to create their own classroom libraries. And ironically, I think it was in a response to getting some of the books out. And so they wanted to help teachers create their own libraries in their classrooms to kind of counter that. And I don't think they anticipated that I would be creating a library where my students could see alternate views. So I'm really into John McWhorter right now, and Glenn Lowry. And one of my favorites is Bob Woodson. He's great. And so I have, you know, Shelby Steele, and I have all these books that are alternative, more conservative Black voices who they're not even allowed to have in the library.
Wow. Yes, go ahead.
My goal is to be able to have these students see other views and then articulate their arguments against them if they want to, but they can't argue against it if they don't know what the views are.
Right. Well, you've articulated this beautifully. I am so pleased that you were a guest on the podcast. I can't thank you enough, and I speak on behalf of all of our listeners. We're really proud of you. I know this is hard. This is not the easy path. It would be easy for you to just sit there and keep teaching and collecting your check and educating the kids and everything's good. But man, this makes a difference. It takes strong people for things to, we've got a great history in this country. When good things happen in America, it's because really strong citizens stand up for the right things and get it done. And that's you, Kadrin, to a T. That is you, man. I'm so, so proud of you and encourage you to keep going with this. Let's end with something fun, shall we? I'm going to ask you one final question and we'll end it there. How many times, because I've been a little bit nervous since you're an English teacher, how many times did yours truly botch the English language during this interview?
I'm trying not to listen to any of that. I'm just trying, it's all peace and love over here. I'm not even paying attention. And that now, if you handed it on a piece of paper and I could look at it thoroughly, I might find some there.
I will not provide a transcript of this interview because you will pick me apart like crazy.
That's funny. I mean, I love to do it. I mean, I could edit papers all day. It's just something that I like to do. But no, I didn't even notice because I was trying not to notice.
I know. And I spent years in radio and I would get emails and letters from listeners back in the day and they'd say, oh, you just said this wrong or this wrong. I'm like, yeah, but sometimes you use the word yeah, which isn't really a word because it's broadcasting. To me, sometimes when you're communicating or speaking, there is, there's parlance. There's all kinds of different things that you can do, I guess. And so I hope that my English was okay to pass this interview.
That's perfect.
Thank you, Cadron. All the very best to you, and please stay in touch and let us know how it's going, okay?
Thank you so much.
All right. Have a great day. She is Cadron Sullivan, and she is amazing, folks. I mean, just unbelievably, amazingly strong for stepping up and doing this. And, you know, so can you imagine the teachers in that school and what they think of Cadron right now? And she's heard from an awful lot of them that side with her, and she's heard from students that side with her. But the district has gone radio silent on her. You heard her say it. The Shawnee Mission School District is just completely ignoring the entire thing at this point. And maybe their thought is she's going to go away or it's going to back down. I want to see how we can get this into a board meeting, like a special board meeting, not a regular monthly school board meeting, like a special one, just this topic, and play these videos that these teachers are required to watch that the district won't show to the public. This is an outrage, folks. This is how they do it. This is their playbook. It is pure evil. And they're using children for their own gain. I just think it's one of the saddest things I've ever seen. Just absolutely horrific. She's awesome. Again, her name is Cadron Sullivan at Shawnee Mission North. And I would hope that you would share this podcast with your friends and others and let them know what she is doing. The story that she wrote, the opinion piece, can be found at readlion.com. That's read like read it, R-E-A-D, readlion.com. That is the website. They're based in Smithville, and they do a lot of great work. It's a lot of great conservative work at that site, The Lion. It's called readlion.com. So go check it out if you want to read her whole piece. She's amazing. Cadron Sullivan. It's brought to you by Advantage Termite and Pest Control, online at advantagetpc.com. Call 913-768-8989. Aaron and his family would love to work for you at your home or your business. Take care of all those critters with Advantage Termite and Pest Control. Great Life Golf is online at greatlifekc.com. If you would like information about their signature clubs like Falcon Ridge, Staley Farms, and Prairie Highlands, you'd like to join for all the golf you can play for one low monthly fee, send an email to join@greatlifegolf.com. That's join@greatlifegolf.com. Go to their website, check out the golf courses. There's over 50 of them now in multiple states, and there's probably one near you. Play more golf. I'm going to with greatlifegolf.com. And crosskitchenskc.com. Tim Cross is proud to be the sponsor of our Armed Forces Day, which is coming up in 2 weeks. May 20th is Armed Forces Day. We're going to be at the Wyandotte County Fairgrounds with Friends in Service of Heroes. Our friends at Fish, we're going to have another bags tournament, cornhole. It's going to be an amazing day. On Friday, we'll have much more information on this event as we have our guest joining us from Friends in Service of Heroes. It's going to be a lot of fun. And we hope that you will, you know, take part in it like we take part in it. We can't thank Tim Cross at Cross Kitchens for being so, so adamant about supporting Friends in Service of Heroes and making a difference with veterans right here in our community. Pretty cool stuff. Way to go, Tim. You are aces with us. That's it for this episode of KKHI. Again, spread the word on what this lady's doing and how courageous she is. I think it's awesome, and I hope you enjoyed it. Cadron Sullivan, thank you so much for joining us right here at Kevin Keatsman Has Issues.
Thanks for listening to Kevin Keatsman Has Issues, presented by Roberts Robinson Chevrolet Buick GMC. to get exclusive patrons-only podcasts, receive a weekly newsletter, and attend in-person patrons-only parties, visit kkhasissues.com and become a patron today. This has been a production of Crooked Tail Media Incorporated.